Good morning, AWS, and welcome to the AWS Morning Brief for Monday, November 18th. This week brings me to Nashville in an escalatingly poor series of life choices. This episode is sponsored in part by AWS Solutions. We all have AWS problems, but they have AWS Solutions. These are bespoke solutions knit together out of both native AWS options as well as third-party offerings as well. Check them out. To learn more, visit snark.cloud/AWS solutions. And thank you to AWS and their solutions org for the lapse in judgment that resulted in sponsoring this ridiculous podcast. Now, what happened last week in the world of AWS? Kind of a lot as reInvent grows ever nearer. Amazon Cloud Search provides option to mandate HTTPS and minimum TLS version. Apparently, I wasn't the only person who'd forgotten that Cloud Search existed, because the security team has rediscovered it recently as well. Amazon CloudWatch Metric Math now supports additional functions. A little bit too late for the monster math for Halloween, the graveyard graph still shows what we care about. Amazon Connect launches tagging support for the user management API. It sounds like Amazon Connect is really just cutting its ties to all other AWS services and building things correctly. Godspeed to them. Amazon DynamoDB Adaptive Capacity now handles imbalanced workloads better by isolating frequently accessed items automatically. They're edging ever closer to telling you when you've got hotkeys, rather than keeping it as a fun mystery that you get to solve yourself in your own free time. Amazon Elastic Container Service publishes multiple GitHub actions in a tacit admission that code commit has no customers. Amazon ElastiCache now supports T3 standard cache nodes, so you can now add CPU credits exhausted to the already lengthy list of why your cache might be breaking things. Amazon GuardDuty supports exporting findings to an Amazon S3 bucket. This is a very nice enhancement from their default of exporting findings to a dashboard that nobody remembers to check, but they will still bill you for it. Amazon QuickSight launches actions for dashboard interactivity, UI-based ingestion history, and more in a last-ditch attempt to land a single customer for Amazon QuickSight. Amazon RDS for SQL Server now supports R5 and T3 instance types. It's not every day that you see the license for a database now cost an order of magnitude more than the hardware for that database. That's usually an Oracle trick. Speaking of horribly expensive databases, Amazon RDS Performance Insights now supports countermetrics on Amazon RDS for SQL Server. You can now illustrate exactly where on the spectrum of slow and expensive your SQL Server falls this week. Amazon Redshift announces a console refresh to improve management and monitoring of your data warehouse. That's right, your multi-million-dollar data warehouse gets a fresh coat of paint on the clunky web app you use to interact with it. Amazon Redshift also launches cross-instance restore. That's right, you can now restore to ever angrier instances. Amazon SNS adds support for dead letter queues. This is, in fact, depressingly, where all of your SNS messages to Santa Claus wind up. Amazon Workspaces introduces Workspaces Directory APIs. That's right, you can now use computers instead of people to manage computers. You can automate your operational playbooks with AWS Systems Manager. So now you can click buttons to run runbooks to resolve errors, because that always works super well. In seriousness, runbooks are great until suddenly they're disastrous because of edge cases. And outages are always edge cases. AWS CloudFormation updates for Amazon API Gateway, AWS Code Pipeline, AWS Amplify, Amazon Elasticsearch, AWS App Mesh, and more. So many service enhancements for CloudFormation and so little time to pick one to beat up on. Let's go with Code Pipeline. It's like SNS for CI/CD, only expensive. It's like they held a vote for the most creative name and then picked the loser. It's like GitHub Actions, except it doesn't have customers. The hits keep on coming. AWS Code Pipeline enables passing variables between actions at execution time. Wait, how on earth was it a pipeline without being able to pass variables? It feels like we're going to need a plumber to take a look at that. AWS Cost Explorer now supports hourly and resource level granularity, and they charge you a non-deterministic amount of money that you're only going to find out after enabling it, because it's roughly 24 per EC2 instance, because everything is terrible in the world of AWS billing. Welcome to my hell. AWS Managed Services, which is their group of people, not a service, now supports SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 12 Service Pack 4. That's right, AWS Managed Services, and no one else uses SUSE. Bring Your Own IP for Amazon Virtual Private Cloud is now available in 5 additional regions. The BGP folks are over the moon happy about this, but those of you who make better choices probably vaguely suspect that this is an area into which you should not press. You are correct. Here be dragons. Data Lifecycle Manager now supports adding tags to the lifecycle policy. Billing visibility comes for all things, eventually, to the hideous pile of money spent on data storage. NoSQL Workbench for Amazon DynamoDB adds support for DynamoDB Local. DynamoDB Local has always seemed goofy to me, and judging by the terms and conditions around DynamoDB Local, it's also freaking terrifying to AWS's lawyers. You're not allowed to run it in production or, frankly, look at it directly without paying DynamoDB the real service. Now, for something less goofy, this episode is also sponsored in part by Manifold. Manifold is an API marketplace. If you have an API-first product that you want to bring to where the customers are, you should talk to Manifold. They're embedded with a whole bunch of different platforms that wind up going where your customers tend to be. They also make some of the annoying parts of building a product like that go away. You can focus on building the best product for your users, while Manifold takes care of the complicated things like billing, identity, and provisioning. To learn more, check them out at manifold.co. That's manifold.co. Parameter Store announces enhanced search experience. Excuse me, that is Systems Manager Parameter Store to you, and yes, the Systems Manager Parameter Store is now open for business. You can now support record-level insert, update, and delete on S3 with Amazon EMR. That's right, their managed Hadoop as a service offering for sad people. EMR awakens from its long slumber to address the needs of customers with ossified workloads. Use the AWS CLI version 2 preview with AWS Single Sign-On to increase developer productivity. This is a formal offering from AWS that effectively offers the open source tool AWS-Vault as a service. I'm cautiously optimistic that this will offer other handy fixes for annoying CLI issues, but it is a user interface from AWS. My expectations are tempered appropriately. You can now configure table settings when you restore a table from your Amazon DynamoDB backups. Somehow I missed there was a formal way to restore backups that didn't require writing a custom importer from scratch. So that's right, things sneak past all of us, even me. You can accelerate SQL Server always-on deployments with AWS Launch Wizard. I've read this release 3 times now, and I still don't know if the AWS Launch Wizard is a tool or a person, or a tool of a person. A new service has come out, the AWS Data Exchange. You can find, subscribe to, and use data products. That's right, the AWS Dating Exchange is now live in a bold attempt to put Tinder the hell out of business. I'm told there's no better place to data scientist. There are new automation features in AWS Systems Manager, but it appears that they haven't spoken to nearly enough real-world customers yet. The concept of update my version of foo to 3.2 can be called a lot of things, but no engineers except those at Amazon refer to that as a document. In a long-awaited release, you can now import existing resources into a CloudFormation stack. Finally, there's an alternative to the good work with that thing you built in the console. Now, throw it all away and build it in CloudFormation. What are you, stupid? Position that AWS has taken towards all of its customers for roughly the last 15 years. There's a how-to available on the security blog on how to enable encryption in a browser with the AWS Encryption SDK for JavaScript and Node.js. That's right. The AWS Encryption SDK for JavaScript is indeed now generally available. I don't personally see what all the hubbub is about. I find the existing crypto libraries to be far too confusing, so I just roll my own. Remember, if I can't break it, it's secure. There's a blog post on the Storage blog about monitoring data transfer costs related to Amazon S3 replication. The original version of this blog post typoed the cost per gigabyte of data transfer as 20 cents rather than 2 cents, and that is more damning than literally anything else I can possibly say about it. And lastly, on a lighter note, Jeff Barr has written a post called 15 Years of AWS Blogging. This is a heartfelt, sincere, and authentic reflection by AWS chief evangelist Jeff Barr on his 15 years of blogging, except for the part where he refers to me indirectly as a pundit and picks the losing side of my great war for AMI pronunciation. In seriousness, it's a great read. Check it out. Many happy returns, Jeff. And that's what happened last week in AWS. Thanks for listening. I'm cloud economist Corey Quinn, fixing the horrifying AWS bill here in San Francisco, or Nashville, or wherever I happen to find them. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you've hated this podcast, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and yell at me on Twitter.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.